Chapter 2. Saturday. The Darkness. Sophie does not wish to be at this party. Watching her employees get drunk and rowdy, she wants to go to the bookstore, the one that she owns, the one that is causing her deep ambivalence and massive stress. It is counterintuitive, she knows, that she finds herself longing to be in the very place that is the nexus of her angst, but she has a plan to remedy this contradiction. She is building a refuge inside the store, a room of her own. She has not yet taken up occupancy, but she is slowly preparing to nest. She has even begun to move some essentials, her electric kettle, a small satchel of clothing, a bag stuffed with cash, into the little nook just behind the fiction room. It's an architectural fluke, this cozy, tiny space, this little house for a mouse, this parallel universe accessed by depressing a button in the corner of the shelf currently occupied by Graham Greene, although that is not an always reliable landmark, since the location of his oeuvre shifts seasonally depending on the alphabetical crapshoot of the latest crop of books. Over the course of many years, she has watched various established authors' perches shift radically, like Toni Morrison, who last spring migrated across two entire shelves, and then by the end of the summer season returned to where she began, like the ebb and flow of beachfront sand. Regardless of which books front the access panel, her private room is there, a constant. No one else knows about it, as far as she knows, apart from Ibrahim, the architect who designed the store and who still helps her out from time to time with small repairs because he is a nice guy. Not much was required to put the room together. The sturdy industrial door had been there for many decades, as was the bookcase that obscured it, but the door was laborious to open. Some 6 months ago, after the onset of a plague of sleepless nights following the death of her husband, she asked Ibrahim for advice. He offered to bolt the bookcase to the door, grease the hinges, and add a heavy-duty electric gizmo to make it open more easily. It was $790 well spent. Now the shelter gives her solace and makes her think she has a plan, like the emergency food and water she keeps in the attic at home. She goes up there from time to time, carefully navigating the narrow stairs from the hallway outside her bedroom, just to check, to be sure it's all still there. The 5 cases of ramen she picked up at Costco, the 5 gallons of water. She's had these rations since 9/11, however, and she keeps forgetting that it's surely time to refresh. But right now, this is where she needs to be. Here. In this small apartment in Northern Virginia that is crammed full of her employees, most of them young enough to be her kids. Jamal, the store manager, is throwing a party to say goodbye to his colleagues. He is off to study law at the University of Chicago, his first choice school. Sophie is happy for him, thrilled, proud. But she is also bereft. She can't imagine running the store without him. A vile yellow liquid is being passed around the room, and she watches them drink it on a dare. Apparently it's a Chicago thing, this Malort, and it tastes so horrific that it's been called the most disgusting liquor of all time. Someone has, for better or worse, managed to find a bottle of it in D.C. Sophie watches a young woman with short, spiky, peroxided hair tilt back her head and pour the syrupy yellow liquid into her mouth. She then gasps and chokes and spits it onto the floor. "Ugh," she says. "This is horrible. It tastes like suffering." She grabs at her throat theatrically. Sophie is having trouble retrieving her name, but she does remember that she fired this young woman a couple of weeks ago, which was a rare and upsetting event. But after a week of hand-wringing and long discussions with Jamal, they agreed that she needed to be let go on account of a belligerent episode with a customer. Sophie wonders why she is even here, at this party. Ought she be worried that she can't remember her name? Perhaps she is having a deliberate mental block, wishing away the entire bad episode. But who knows? She's owned the bookstore for more than 20 years. Even though she has been grateful to, and frankly even adored, pretty much every one of her employees, and even though she keeps in touch with many of them, by now at least a few of the short-termers have morphed into a pastiche of brainy English majors.